Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh God, I'm so sorry. I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, this week, but I'm not.
Matt Scalise is the managing producer of programming for AL.com, and he joins us now as he does each and every week. He has an outstanding persona. Is it a persona or a posana? I'm not sure. We'll ask me. He's a word guy. You know, I talk words, but Matt writes words. Maybe he knows better than we know, and he joins us now on a Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline. Matt, welcome in. How are you?
I'm good, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm great. Didn't you get the sense that Nick Saban was just looking? I mean, I know they had the ESPN folks there and they were doing some sort of a deal, you know, for their game day show on Saturday morning, but he was just looking for an opportunity to have something, you know, to just give some kind of a soundbite. So he jumps on persona, which I actually thought was persona, not persona, but that was one that felt more contrived than normal for even Coach Saban.
Yeah, I think he was looking for his opportunity to have an exchange with a media member. And frankly, there's not much reason for it to come up. And it's, you know, that's been kind of the running theme of Nick Saban's press conferences all year long, is all of those moments have been created by Nick Saban, because he's trying to find ways to keep this team motivated while they continue to basically mow down every team they play against. And it's got to be a challenge. I think it's a challenge most coaches would prefer to be presented with if they could. You know, it's a what we would call a first world problem. But Nick Saban is, I think, looking for opportunities to create tension, because he knows that for a team to be motivated and successful, you know, they have to keep pushing themselves. They have to feel that tension so that they continue to push themselves to get better every week. And I think press conferences have always been an opportunity for him to do that, and he's certainly done it this year. The press conferences, I would say, so far have been the most exciting part of a week for Alabama football. Because there's no conflict outside of them. There is no real negativity around the program at all. There's not really been any off-field issues. You know, there's been a couple of injuries they've had to deal with, but this is about as smooth as a football team could ask for their season to go so far. And I think Nick Saban has this, because of who he is, he has this nagging worry in his head that if his team doesn't face enough adversity, by the time they get to the end of November, they're going to be unprepared for the difficulties of playing tougher competition.
Yeah, but the smile and the wink on that one was almost like, you know, I need something here. You know, somebody throw me something that I could twist around or do something with. I mean, that, you know, there are times when he is genuinely, you know, got a point. I mean, let's face it, after the Texas A&M game, the press conference after the Texas A&M game, to listen to the questions – and his responses, you would think that they got beat by 20. You know what I mean? You would think that they got rolled up on in that game, the way he was responding, to the point where he finally said, look, we're not going to beat everybody 66-3. And, you know, on a road, you get a win like that, it's a garbage touchdown that makes it an 8-point game and whatever. But that seemed, you know, kind of more genuine. This one, when you throw the wink in there, you know, come on, you're just playing that one up for the cameras.
I think he loved what happened in the Texas A&M game. Part of him,
yeah,
because I think it gave him a chance to finally have a reason to tell his team, you're not so good. You're not as good as you think you are. And they actually had to listen to him. Even though, as you said, I think if you go back and look at the second half of that game, Texas A&M was extremely fortunate to even be in a position where they could possibly tie the game up with an onside kick and a two-point conversion with a few seconds left. I mean, for it to even be remotely in the realm of possibility for them to come back, they had to have so many things go their way. But Nick Saban, I think, again, because of who he is, he's not going to ever be satisfied, even if this team blows out everybody they play for the rest of the year, because he's always going to be trying to convince his team that the next game they play is going to be the one where they really do face adversity and it all goes wrong. It all goes the other team's way, and how are you going to deal with it if you haven't been prepared for that? So I think there's a part of him that likes that his team had to sweat out the second half of that game and they had to listen to a really rowdy crowd. And I would give Texas A&M credit. Their fan base, when they were only down 12 points, they sounded like they just took the lead. And, you know, I think, again, that was Alabama's first real opportunity to face something resembling a difficult situation this season. And it will pay off them in some respects down the road, I think. At least that's what Nick Saban's probably hoping for.
It's like taking poison, like rat poison.
One of the best lines he gave us. You know, it's every week I get something for the board, and the old rat poison, you know, towards ESPN, you got to like that. I agree with you, by the way, how they were reacting. And if you saw afterwards, you know, when the guys were coming, coaches and everything are coming across the field, Kevin Sumlin had a smile on his face like he had just saved his job. I mean, he was like the happiest guy in the world that he only got beat by 8 points. And if they can bounce back against Florida, you know, if they go to Florida and beat Florida, he saved his job. If they turn around and get whacked by Florida, they got whacked by LSU, then he's right back in the hot seat again. But he may have saved his job by getting beat by 8 points. I never saw a guy smile so much after a loss.
Yeah, I said after the game on Twitter that I think Texas A&M fans are feeling better tonight than Alabama fans are. And, of course, I had a bunch of angry Alabama fans telling me how wrong I was, that they always will take a win. But the truth is, Alabama fans winning, just winning is not good enough for Alabama fans. Mm-hmm. And, that you know, you don't have to interpret that as a negative thing. Alabama fans have higher expectations than any fan base in the country. And that's reasonable for them to have high expectations right now because their team is so much better than everybody else they play. Could they lose on any given Saturday? Of course they can, because sometimes things don't go your way. Sometimes you make mistakes. Guys get hurt. But, you know, Alabama fans didn't come away from Texas A&M with the kind of dominant second half that they expect from their team on a week-to-week basis right now. And Texas A&M, I think those fans went into that game thinking, you know, certainly hoping they could be competitive, but probably not thinking they had any real chance of winning. And to even get it close again in the second half was a victory for that fan base who started this season with probably one of the most disappointing losses that we've seen in college football this year. I think the fact that they have any positive momentum going right now is a big win for Kevin Sumlin. And right now, you look at the situation they're in, their offense seemed like they were starting to click. They were putting some good drives together. I think they have a really dynamic quarterback right now who made some incredible plays against Alabama. And they're going up against a Florida team that right now looks like they have absolutely no clue what they're doing on offense. It's offensive to watch. And I would say I'd feel pretty good if I was Texas A&M heading into this weekend.
Last week I was saying that after LSU beat Florida, that this meant that Troy was the second best team in the SEC East. The only problem with that is that South Alabama whacked them last night at Troy. And now I don't know what to think.
Nothing makes sense in college football, nothing. Which is why we love it. And it's so unexpected. I mean, South Alabama hasn't had a pulse all year long. And they just sort of, you know, Troy did this last year, too. It's strange. They were briefly ranked in the top 25 last year. you know, they had really built up a lot of hype, and then they just absolutely didn't show up the next week and got blown out of their own home stadium. And I think that's a similar crash point to what we saw last night from Troy. I don't know what happened. I didn't watch very much of the game. I was just sort of keeping up with the score. And yeah. I think, you know, maybe if you're a Troy fan, you at least feel better about keeping Neil Brown around for another year.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, you know, with all of these kids, and you watch a game like that, the way that unfolded last night, or even Saban's rat poison comment, you know what I mean? We forget, he's so right, really, about that in terms of, you know, what the kids hear and see, and their you know, their phones are going off, and they see stuff on air if the ESPN or AL.com is talking about them or whatever. It's been 20 years for me since I've been on the sideline, and it's hard for me to even remember sometimes what it was like to be around 18, 19, and 20-year-old kids. These really are kids, and it is so difficult to have consistency week in and week out with these kids because they are kids, and a lot of them actually still go to class and have girlfriends and school stuff. They're kids, and I think that's the thing that's most remarkable is to try and keep their focus straight when now – it's unbelievable the amount of social media and outside conversation there are about them, especially at this level. I was at a small college level. At this level, I mean, you've got all of that other outside distraction. That's really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. These are, again, these rants are about – they are for the players and about the players.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows they're watching it. He knows they're paying attention to it. I think a lot of people still to this day – as long as Nick Saban's still been in Tuscaloosa, he's been here 10 years now, I think a lot of people still, you know, we hear it from Alabama fans. They see these rants and they think that Nick Saban is fighting the media, that the media is his enemy and that he's putting them in their place. And the reality is that's not what's happening at all. You know, the media is doing its job, and their job is not to motivate Alabama's players. Their job is to write stories about what actually is going on, as close as we can tell. And I think Nick Saban knows that his job is to motivate his players. And he needs to paint the stories coming out of the media as irrelevant to his players and, you know, ill-informed. And he needs them to make sure that they don't believe all the positive things said about them, because he knows that's the enemy of progress.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still think it's funny how often fans see those things and start to paint the media as the enemy of their program. And I think in some programs, players, we even see players start to do that too, and start to see players take on a hostility towards the media. But we don't really see it at Alabama, and the truth is that Nick Saban isn't hostile towards the media either. But I think it's hard to make that distinction for a lot of fans and hard to understand what Nick Saban is actually trying to do. But he knows what he's doing, and he's a master at it. I mean, there is no coach maybe in the history of college football that has as much experience dealing with his team being publicly proclaimed as the greatest in college football and still succeeding anyway in spite of that. No, I don't think any coach has ever had to coach through as many seasons where his team has been called unbeatable and by far better than everybody else they're playing. That coach's motivational nightmare, and Nick Saban has dealt with it more than anybody else.
Matt Scalise with us, AL.com. Shifting gears, you know, of course, the narrative across the country with much glee is that the SEC is down again, you know, and somehow, some way, shape, or form, this conference is a shell of its former self. Now, it's definitely not as deep as it had been in the past. What it looks like now is like other conferences, you know, where they have a lot of meat at the top, and then, you know, the teams in the middle and lower part of the conference are not very good. And the funny thing is, there was never this thought process. It would be very, very difficult for the SEC to ever get two teams in a playoff because they eat each other up. So now the SEC looks like the other conferences where they've got three dominant teams. And I find it very ironic that right now, the potential, halfway in, the potential for the SEC to put two teams in the playoff in a period of time when they're supposedly so awful is greater than ever before, and it's going to be two out of three teams. That's why this game, LSU and Auburn, is so fascinating to see where they are in the mix. But there's this possibility that there'll be 11-1s and 12-1s and 13-0s and 12-1s and things like that, where you might have to take Georgia, Alabama, and or Auburn if Auburn wins that. But Alabama's only losses to Auburn at Auburn, and then Auburn wins the SEC. Then you got to take both Alabama and Auburn. I mean, it's crazy that now the league has a better chance of getting two teams in a playoff than they did when they were so quote unquote deep.
Well, first of all, I don't believe the SEC is going to get two teams in, and I don't think any conference is. I'll believe it when it happens one day, but I believe the playoff was created specifically to prevent such a thing from happening. And so I don't think you'll ever see the committee put two in unless they just face with some impossible scenario where they absolutely have no choice. But I don't think it'll happen this year, certainly.
Wait a minute now. Let me stop here right there. 13-0 Alabama beat Georgia in the SEC championship game 27-24. Georgia finishes 12-1. Unless somebody else is running the I mean, what are you going to do with a 12-1 Georgia team that lost by three to the number one team in the country?
You're unfortunately going to have to send them to a New Year's Six Bowl because I think what happens is the committee is going to look at that as a scenario where they're going to say, look, you know, you had your chance to get into the playoff here. You know, you had essentially a play-in game.
And you mean like Ohio State last year?
You had an opportunity. You're not being denied a chance to have played your way in, but you didn't get it. And I think the fact that this committee, I mean, the composition of it, the whole purpose of it existing is to keep 2011 from ever happening again. That's why it was formed. And I think they will uphold that purpose unless they are faced with just absolutely no choice. But that said, when you talk about the SEC being viewed as down or just, you know, not having the same advantage it used to have, the thing we got to remember here is there were always two factors at play in this sort of sudden downturn in the SEC. There's the fact that the SEC, you know, rose to the top of college football in part because they had more money than almost every other conference, and they had a better talent base to draw from than certainly every other conference. Now, for a while, those advantages made it so that the SEC attracted the best coaching talent by far. I think they at one point had five or six even head coaches in the SEC that had won national championships.
Mm-hmm.
There's currently only one in the SEC. And that is, I think, more than anything, what has made this downturn happen for the SEC is you've had a drain of coaching talent in a pretty rapid period of time. And those great national championship caliber coaches have been replaced by mediocre to poor coaching hires. And I think there's been some instability because of that, but there's also been poor management of these programs under those coaches. There were some bad hires made all across the league. And the thing to remember here, though, is the money advantage hasn't gone away for the SEC, and the talent advantage hasn't gone away either. So if and when any of these programs does make a good coaching hire, they're gonna rebound pretty quickly, and they're gonna become nationally prominent again. And I think that might be what we're seeing with Georgia, for sure. And I think Auburn, I think part of what we're seeing here with Auburn is that Gus Malzahn made some adjustments between last season, really over the last two seasons. He's made some good coordinator hires, and I think they're in part benefiting from the instability throughout the rest league. We'll see. Look, if Auburn comes up and beats Alabama this year, I think they deserve to be called a powerhouse in the league. But it's been a while since that happened. And I think you look at what happened in the Clemson game. To me, still, I think Auburn, of the three that you mentioned, Auburn still has the most to prove this year because they've got a loss on their record. It was a pretty ugly loss. And I think I want to see them beat another high-quality opponent before I'm ready to put them on the level of Alabama.
Well, yeah, for them to get there, they would have beaten LSU, first of all, and that's not a little thing. They would have to have beaten Georgia, which is a top-five team right now, and then they will have beaten Alabama at home, and then they will have beaten somebody in the SEC championship game, Georgia, again probably. So that would be a 13-1 Auburn team. My question is, after what we saw last year with Ohio State, and maybe the result of Ohio State in the playoff changes the committee's mind, but if that's Alabama's only loss and they're 11-1, I wonder if the committee it feels compelled to take them. If they lost a close game at Alabama, we got the same exact situation. Or even if Auburn were to lose to Georgia and then come back and beat Georgia in the SEC championship game, they got there because they beat Alabama, so they both had one loss in the league. They win the tiebreaker, they go, they avenge their loss to Georgia. Auburn's 12-2, Alabama's 11-1. Penn State is 12-2, Ohio State's 11-1, and look what they did. I mean, they could be heading for Armageddon again.
I think that would be the ugliest possible scenario. I think if you have a two-loss SEC champion and a one-loss team that doesn't play in the SEC championship game, that's probably the only scenario where you're talking about the committee making a decision to take somebody that's not the SEC champion from the SEC. But I don't think you'd get two teams in. And look, there'd be a lot of angry people about it, just like I'm sure there were a lot of angry Penn State fans. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think the whole reason that this committee came into existence is to make sure that you don't get one conference that has two teams playing in the national championship against each other. That was the nightmare scenario for college football, and it came true in 2011. And I think that's a big reason why we have a playoff today. I don't think you're going to see that get betrayed. I think the conferences have done their best to make sure that scenario doesn't ever happen again. But, you know, I think, again, right now, unless if there is a two-loss SEC champion, we are probably looking at some chaos here. But if Georgia, if Auburn, if Alabama make it through and win the SEC with one loss, I don't think there's any controversy at all. I think the discussion is over, and you're going to have an SEC team that's probably a really good team that gets left out. But again, I think the committee will look at it and say, you had your opportunity. You had a chance to win the league. You could have won it on the field and didn't.
All right. Before I let you go, clearly Clemson's playing on Friday night so that Dabo Swinney could be in Tuscaloosa on Saturday night at the celebration for the 92 championship team. I mean, that's obvious now. We know that to be fact. And the question is, A, cheered or booed? B, will he be wearing Clemson gear or will he wear an Alabama golf shirt?
I'll say he wears neutral gear.
Won't wear
ceremony.
Clemson gear. Yeah, okay.
I think he will not wear Clemson. I do think that I'm very curious to see what kind of reception he gets. I think you'll have some older fans that cheer for Dabo. I think the student section will roundly boo him because they were just denied a national championship by losing to that coach. That's all they know about him.
They don't know that he's one of them. They don't want to welcome him with open arms for, you know, 4 years from now.
You know, I think this would be a little bit of a different situation if Dabo was well known as an Alabama football player before his time at Clemson. And I just don't really think we're not talking about a guy who was a starting quarterback at Alabama. You know, we all know he has a connection, but this isn't a guy who was an Alabama legend before he went to Clemson. He is definitely more known today as a Clemson coach than as a former Alabama player. And I think for the most part, there's respect from the Alabama fan base for Dabo. He is their type of person. He certainly has not ever done anything disrespectful towards Alabama. He's never really been a trash talker. I think they like him. I think there's a lot of fans that, you know, probably hope that he's the coach at Alabama one day. Hopefully, I'm sure they hope that's far off in the future, but one day. And, you know, I would say the real highlight for Saturday in that ceremony is going to be Gene Stallings being there. And, you know, he's been so much this year, and he's just a man that's so universally beloved by this fan base. I think it's going to be a really special moment when you see Coach Stallings get introduced to that crowd.
Yeah. Yeah, that will be special, no doubt about it. All right, Matt, I appreciate you as always. Great stuff, great conversation. By the way, Josh Bean, I think, hates me now because I went on this rant about the soccer should be disbanded and U.S. soccer should be disbanded, and you know, because of their inability to make the tournament, the World Cup. And he posted that my posting was the I think he said either the stupidest or the dumbest. It was like I lost the internet. He said, "This is the dumbest thing I've read on the internet today," or something like that. And I hope he understood
that
it was.
He's not gonna hold back. He's a man who is frank with his opinions.
Hope he understood there was some tongue in cheek in there, though. That's the only thing. I mean, I think he took it like 100% verbatim, because I went into this whole rant about, oh, it's not our sport and we need to stop playing it and all this other kind of stuff. And he's like, "This is the dumbest thing I read on the internet today." I'm like, wait, that's Josh Bean. That's my guy, you know? And now I don't think he'll talk to me. I need a text to make sure we're still okay.
Josh loves you, I'm sure. He will definitely call you out on a bad sports opinion if he sees it that way. But he's also sincerely one of the nicest human beings I have ever worked with. You cannot imagine a nicer – I mean, sports journalists are not really known for being the most cuddly personalities. Josh is like something straight out of the 1950s. He is just one of the nicest guys you could ever meet.
Yeah, he is. No, he's tremendous. But this is the exact quote. "This is the dumbest thing I've read on the internet today, by a long shot." not just a little bit. By a long shot. Yeah, I replied to him. I'm known for that. But I never heard anything more from him. So I don't know. Hopefully we're good, but we'll see. All right, man. Appreciate you. Good stuff as always.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, thanks. All right, when we come back, Russ Mitchell, he's up next right here in the Tom Abraham Show, 730-1039 AM. Sammy Hager, 69 tomorrow. Good gracious almighty. He's getting the Throwback Thursday treatment. All right. This will be interesting to keep this conversation going that we were just having with Matt Scalise regarding the status of the SEC right now. And we get to do it with Russ Mitchell. He is the senior writer for the SEC for College Football News. And he joins us now on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline. Russ, how you doing, my man?
Woody Anderson Ford VIP Hotline, baby.
That's right, man. That's right.
I like it.
And I rock that Ford Fusion. It's just like Brad Keselowski's. It doesn't have a number on the side, but other than that, man, it's exactly the same. About 700 horsepower. Got a window net in it and everything.
Let's kick some tires and light some fires. Are we talking about the SEC right now?
Yeah. I just got done with Matt Scalise from AL.com, and we were talking about the irony of, you know, the SEC is quote-unquote down, and they are in the middle of the pack, certainly, and at the bottom, some bad football being played. But how much now, all of a sudden, the SEC, which could never even think about getting two teams in the playoff because of the fact that they would eat themselves alive because there's so much competition in the league, now they're like all the other conferences. They got three really good teams and a bunch of really crappy teams, so they're going to have all these possibilities of unbeaten teams. Now, I understand that some things would have to happen in some other conferences, but are we starting to develop a real life scenario where, let's say, a 13-0 Alabama, a 12-1 Georgia that was competitive in Atlanta, you got to take them both? I mean, does that happen? Or also speak to Auburn upsets Alabama at home. They go in, you know, maybe they had lost to Georgia. They avenged the loss to Georgia in Atlanta. They're 12-2. Alabama's 11-1 with one loss, and it was on the road in a close game at Auburn. Do they have to take Alabama a la Ohio State over Penn State last year? Talk about some of those scenarios.
You know, and we were talking about this on Sunday and Monday, and in fact, you left out the far more probable one, which is that, you know, Alabama, which we saw struggle against Texas A&M's run defense on the road, goes into goes into Jordan Hare at the end of the year, loses a la 2011 when they lost to LSU, sits at home while an undefeated Georgia team beats Auburn, and then what are you going to do? You have to take Georgia. You have to take Alabama.
Yeah, or even, like I say, or if it's the other way around, let's say that Auburn loses to Georgia in the regular season, but beats Alabama. So now Alabama's 11-1. They're 7-1 in the league. So is Auburn 7-1 in the league. Auburn gets to go to Atlanta. They go to Atlanta and they avenge their loss to Georgia. They lost to them in the regular season, beat them in Atlanta, and now they're 12-2. Alabama is 11-1, and Georgia is 12-1. Do you take both teams from the SEC championship game? Do you take Georgia and Alabama and leave Auburn because they're 12-2? I mean, that's nuts.
I don't think you'll end up in a situation where both teams playing in a championship game get to go. Not until we get to 8 is that really going to be an option. I don't see that. You know, even if Georgia and Alabama are undefeated, I don't.
Really?
I don't think.
Alabama beats Georgia 27-24 in Atlanta and finishes undefeated. Georgia's 12-1 with a 27-24 loss to the number one team in the country. You don't take them?
People remember the last game, you know.
Yeah.
And if, you know, the thing about the Iron Bowl is it would have been 14 days or 16 days before the voting. And again, you're looking at the best likelihood scenario for the SEC to get two teams in is for an undefeated Alabama team on the road in a rivalry game losing by 1 point as their only loss of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that's your only loss of the year and you're Alabama, then there's no way you can be left out of the college football playoff. There's just no way. And if Georgia then beats, and in fact, I'll take it one step further. If it doesn't matter who wins. If Auburn beats Georgia or if Georgia beats Auburn, I think you'd get the winner of that game and Alabama.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at a situation where there will, because you know the Big Ten, as long as Delaney's alive, the Big Ten is going to get a team in. And Clemson will get the invite more than likely, the same way Florida State did. Remember, I didn't think Florida State deserved it that first year, but they got in, remember? And then they got waxed by Oregon in the Rose Bowl. So that means there would not be a team basically from west of the Mississippi.
You know,
and that will get you an 18 playoff lickety split.
Yeah, it could happen. I really like Washington out west. So I know they've got a crap non-conference, but I think they're going to run the table unless USC beats them. You know, in the conference championship game or something like that. You know,
I'm sorry. If Washington is undefeated and Alabama's only loss is by, you know, 3 points on the road in a rivalry game in a terrible place like Jordan-Hare, I would rather have Alabama, and I would think they deserve it, even playing in a weak SEC over what the University of Washington has done. By virtue, if for no other reason than the Florida State game to start the season, and I know Florida State's not that great, but it's still, you know, at the time it was scheduled and in terms of the play and in terms of how dominating a performance it was, I would leave the Pac-12 out and I would take Alabama.
The question is, do we think that Clemson is infallible? I mean, they've got Georgia Tech coming up after Syracuse at Syracuse Friday night. They should be all right there. Georgia Tech, though, in their building. But that trip to NC State, then Florida State is always still Florida State. And then South Carolina, which is a rivalry game. And then the big, you know, the ACC championship game, likely against a Miami team that they hadn't played in the regular season. Are we sure that Clemson is just an automatic, unscathed, you know, 13-0?
No, but of all the teams that are undefeated right now, they have the easiest path.
Yeah.
You know,
Easier than Alabama? Easier than Alabama? Because all Alabama's got is Auburn. I mean, that's all Alabama's got is Auburn.
Playing in Jordan-Hare, I would stack all of those other games up, and I would rather play all of them than have to go face this Auburn defense on the road in a place that is a very big leveling field.
Yeah. What do you think about LSU at home against Auburn as a touchdown favorite or a touchdown dog? Auburn hasn't won there in 18 years. It might not mean anything to these kids who were in diapers the last time Auburn won there. But on the other hand, you know, a bunch of them were there 2 years ago when, you know, when LSU and Leonard Fournette ran over Auburn. Is this where Auburn finally gets rid of that mojo and maybe goes big over an Ed Orgeron team that we don't even know what to make of now that they beat Florida, you know, whatever Florida is?
Look, Florida's a bad team. Don't read too much into that Florida game. We talked about it before. You know, Florida is banged up. They have no skill position players. They got a weak quarterback. Their offensive line is they have a weak and inexperienced quarterback. That would be the better word. They've got an offensive line that's a sieve that allowed 5 sacks to an LSU defensive front that hasn't put pressure on anybody. Well, by the way, Texas A&M leads the conference in sacks, and they're going into Florida this weekend. So, you know, I don't read much in LSU's win there at all, at all. And, you know, they were the kid who missed that extra point, his first missed extra point in his career. That was, otherwise it was overtime.
Right.
So those are two bad teams, Florida and LSU. They're below average teams. Meanwhile, Auburn, if LSU is going to win this game, they're going to do it by putting pressure on the quarterback like they were able to do last week against Florida, like Clemson was able to do. You know, if you're an Auburn offensive lineman and you're listening to me right now, you better sack up. You know, you better show up in Baton Rouge, because as long as they protect Stidham, they'll be able to run the ball. Look, Florida ran for 5 yards a carry against LSU on Saturday.
Right. Russ Mitchell with us, College Football News. Nick Saban is on this kind of a scorched earth deal. It looks like Kevin Sumlin was survived. I mean, he was so happy to only get beat by 8 points. And now if they keep it going, if they can go beat Florida, I think that Kevin Sumlin could actually save his bacon. But speaking of bacon, we found out that it turns out Brett Bielema's $15 million buyout is actually only $5.9 million. It's under $6 million.
Yes.
Does you know, they get whacked by 50. He survives a little bit, but then what about Butch? I mean, are we getting to that point in time where we're starting to get announcements? If Butch loses to South Carolina, does he have to get beat by then Alabama by 30, 40, or 50 points, and then they announce before the Kentucky game? Or at what point in time did these guys start falling?
All right, so let's start with the first one, right? So, you know, and not just Bielema, also Jeff Long, you know, after right. the way that he, you know, instigated the whole Bobby Petrino thing, leaving out of Atlanta in the middle of the night, and the debacle that turned into. Now he's run up a lot of debt there. And, you know, rumors are that he's looking for every job that he can get his hands on right now.
Right.
Just to this game, obviously Alabama's going to win it. This is a Arkansas team that's reeling and they don't have a lot of talent. But, you know, if you take away the 175-yard touchdown run last weekend when A&M only had 10 guys on the field, I think Alabama ran 43 times for 3 yards a carry. Roughly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, y'all need to be running a lot better than that by the time you get to Jordan Hare. So, you know, Arkansas doesn't have that good of a run defense, but I'd like to see a little bit more of a flashback to the Vandy game and the Ole Miss game. You're right. It's under $6 million on that ball.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have situations like that. I mean, they got the number one rushing offense in the league. They average 6.4 yards a carry every single time they run the ball, and in nationally they're number 7 in the country, so they're going to be all right.
Yeah,
and I know what you're saying, if you take the one away, but you know, you don't take the one away. It's a 75 yard touchdown run. It is what it is.
You take the one away. Of course you take the one away.
I do take the one
away. You take away the exception to the rule. I mean, obviously you don't take the points off the board, but in terms of fairly evaluating how well your offense did running the ball, you take the other 43 plays and average those out to see what your real average was. And, you know, Alabama's not played a lot of good run defenses.
No.
So you need to be realistic as a fan base and ask yourself, you know, how prepared are we for when the end of the season comes and we have to play a run defense in Auburn that's legit?
Yeah, well, I don't know where they're going to find one until they get to Auburn. You know, LSU comes to Tuscaloosa. I don't think they'll be too tough on them there. I do believe that Alabama has to, they've got to try and find a little bit of balance. They can't throw the ball for 150 yards a game, and their time is going to come where they got to make a few plays. They're 101 in the passing game. This isn't, you know, Nebraska in the 90s, you know, or the wishbone at Oklahoma in the 70s, you know?
Thank you. You know, this isn't 2006 even, you know, or 2005. This is, and you know, I really thought that this, I said as much all last week. I expected Alabama would struggle running the ball, and I thought that this would be Jalen's breakout game. He would, you know, pass for 30 attempts, and he'd have 305 yards and three touchdowns, and, you know, instead it was your punter's game. You know, you got up by a lot and you thought, whatever, we'll just run the ball and coast to a victory, which is fine, but you're right. You know, the only thing that worries me, I have a lot of faith in Jalen, but, you know, let's not wait the whole year.
Right.
And then yank him out of the closet in the very last game and say, yeah, get out there and, you know, on the road in Jordan Hare against this violent run defense. Now we want you to throw the ball like Blake Sims. We want you to put up 400 yards, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and the funny thing is that their best efficiency when they're passing the ball has really been, you know, in those 25 or 28 attempts that Tua has had. I mean, when he's on the field, you know, they chuck it around a little bit more. I mean, his passer rating on 28 attempts, his passer rating is like 176. I mean, it's ridiculous. But it's not something that, you know, it's almost like a toy that they use every once in a while. They just go ahead and throw him in there and see what he can do. And he's going to do it again this weekend.
Everybody loves the backup quarterback.
Right? Oh, yeah.
As far as Tennessee goes, they're, you know, boy, that offense is so bad right now. And now they're substituting in a new quarterback. This is such a Jekyll and Hyde year in the SEC in terms of trying to evaluate teams. But for me, this game comes down to one thing. When South Carolina has been effective, they've been excellent at ball control. You know, and when Samuels broke his leg, he was such a dynamic player at the beginning of the season. It seems that they haven't had a rushing offense the whole year, but it seems that South Carolina has figured out how to play offense again without him on the field. If South Carolina controls the ball in this game, I don't see Tennessee's offense. They need to get some takeaways, and if they don't get that, then they'll lose at home.
And then, you know, do they let him coach it in Tuscaloosa will be the next question. You know, that's going to be the deal is, you know, how long
Alabama
do you keep going with Brett Bielema?
Destroy Tennessee.
Yeah.
Alabama is going to embarrass Tennessee. So, yes, I would let Butch get that embarrassment, and then I would fire him.
And then pull the trigger, yeah, okay. By the way, keep an eye on an interesting thing. Dabo Swinney will be in Tuscaloosa on the field being honored with the 92 championship team and along with Coach Stallings and that whole crew. It's going to be very interesting to see what old Coach Swinney is wearing, whether he's wearing his Clemson gear, whether he's wearing neutral gear, or whether he's wearing an Alabama golf shirt. It's going to be very interesting to see how the crowd reacts, too.
He's got to show up in Bama gear.
Well, the question is, will they cheer him or boo him? You know what I mean? Boo him because he beat Bama or cheer him because they want to welcome him for 4 years down the road?
Well, two reasons. One, you got to welcome him for 4 years down the road. But two, you got to cheer your son, you know?
Yeah, he's
you
one of yours.
You got to cheer your son when he comes home. You got to cheer him. I mean, you got to cheer him.
I would think. All right, man. Appreciate you, Russ. Always good stuff. Russ Mitchell has been our guest, College Football News senior writer. Thanks, Russ.
Take care.
All right. Let's get a break. We'll come back with an update on 730-1039. Yep. Let's get an update with T-Man. Time for our Doghouse Sports Report.
Ezekiel Elliott. That's right. The Cowboys running back His suspension block has been overturned by a judge of the Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. This means Ezekiel Elliott will have to serve his 6-game suspension starting after the bye week. As far as Zeke and his camp, they'll have to refile and start the whole process over in New York if they have any chance of blocking this thing. He might as well just get it over with like Tom Brady did. The potential divide between NFL players and owners continues ahead of the fall meetings next Tuesday. This time, Tennessee Titans' Rishard Matthews was asked on Twitter if the NFL changes the anthem rule, would he stay in the locker room and face the penalty of a fine? Matthews' response, no, I will be done playing football. The tweet has since been deleted. And the Chicago Cubs and the Nationals are set to decide the NLCS in Game 5 tonight. Starting at 7:08, the Nationals have decided to start Gio Gonzalez over Tanner Roark, while the Cubs will go with Kyle Hendricks. I'm Tony Mack. That is your Doghouse Sports Report.
All right, coming up, we have got an open line segment at the top of the 5, as we always do. Your chance to get in a chat about any of the topics that we've covered so far on the show. We'll re-rack everything. For those of you just jumping in your rigs, if you want to get in, 866-485-9867. Text window, 732-982-7469. Tom Abraham Show, 730-1039. The Honk.